We are live. Welcome to the NBA Strategy Show. It is Thursday, October 28th. I am Josh Engelman. I am joined by Adam Scher. We are brought to you by Prize Picks. Boy, are we in for a heck of a strategy show. Before you guys do anything, please hit that like button, subscribe to the channel, hit the notification bell so you know when everything goes live. It all helps us out a ton here. It's time to do it. I guess we're going to have this conversation. Congratulations goes out to my co-host here, Adam Scher, pulling out the 100K win on DraftKings yesterday. Adam, how's it feel?
It feels good. We were talking before the show. It feels weird because when you win, obviously the money's nice and winning's cool. But like from a competitive standpoint, you'd like to win when like you think you played well, as opposed to screwing up your lineups and doing like everything you possibly can to try and lose money. So that part feels weird, but it's nice to win. Not going to complain. Like there's plenty of times that I think I do things really well and I get sixth place instead. So I'll take it.
Do you care to let the people know how your night shook out up until, let's call it like 8:30?
So I tried to get hockey line. I decided at like 6 o'clock, right after the deeper dive, that I would go ahead and play hockey last night too. Don't really know why I did that. But so I'm like scrambling to get hockey done. I'm scrambling to get basketball done. Don't get basketball lineups in by 7. Like, okay, whatever. It's only one game. I'll just redo everything before 7:30 and hope nobody in the 7 o'clock game goes off. For whatever reason, it took me longer than I was expecting to like get stuff done before 7:30. So I like quickly built a cash lineup that had OG Anunoby and Devontae Graham at 7:30. Other than that, they were only two 7:30 players. But as a result, I had zero 7:30 players and then 100% OG Anunoby and Devontae Graham. And then I, just finished stuff up and late swapped around that. So completely awful process and everything. nothing to take away really from repeating anything I did yesterday, but whatever. Better to be lucky than good.
Absolutely. And we talked about it just before we got started here, but there's a difference between, oh, I found a mistake and the things that I did were incorrect and worked out, and what happened for you, which was just, I have to cross off this game. I have to cross off some other stuff. I can only use 8:30 and forward. I have to lock in these guys, but nothing that you were doing, like everything, all your projections were still good. Your late swap process was incredibly helpful for what you were doing. It just so happened that you just skipped a couple games. You basically just crossed off a couple games.
Yeah. Oh, and also I'm just a complete jackass. Like I was rushing to get my cash lineup in at 7:30. I thought Russell Westbrook and Devontae Graham both started at the same time. So I just threw Westbrook at point guard, threw Graham at guard. Graham started early, Westbrook didn't. So I was even limited in like what I could late swap. If I could do it wrong up to that point, I did. But the positive takeaway for me process-wise is I have worked quite a bit. You and I have talked about it, like at coming up with better ways to late swap and get, good lineups late swapping as the night goes on. So I was happy with like the results I got there. I thought my lineups looked pretty good from 8 o'clock on. I'll take that part of it at least.
I think the people would really enjoy this. Do you mind reading off the text message you sent to your mom?
Oh yeah. So I was talking to my mom last night and I told her I'd screwed stuff up. Cause like Josh says to me today, he's like, I bet at 8 o'clock, you'd have been happy just getting your entry fees back. And so I go back through, my texts and from like 10:18 PM last night, would be very happy with any profit tonight, given how much I fucked up at NBA. Like 2 hours later, it's like, oh, cool, I just won.
Turns out you locked in the most profit.
Yeah. Someone said, how did my hockey lineups go? Finished in sixth. Lost money. Well, I made money at hockey, won cash, lost a little bit in tournaments, but best lineup, finished in sixth place.
If you would have double banked hockey and basketball last night, there's no chance you're on this show today.
I'd have been there. Give me some credit for my professionalism.
I mean, you've already missed one this week.
Yeah. If I hadn't missed one this week, maybe I'd have stepped in, but.
All righty. So chat, we had to do this. We had to talk about it out of the gate. Obviously, congratulations. All jokes aside, it's really sick to be able to hit that because it really changes the scope of what you'll be able to do for the rest of the season and just builds in that buffer of like feeling a little bit better for the inevitable downswing that will happen at some point. this helps to fund that a bit. So that's where we're at right now. We've got six games for this slate. I love it. Tomorrow's going to be good too. I'm excited to really dive into both of these bad boys. Let's just start talking some basketball. What do you say?
Yeah, sounds good.
All right, let me go ahead and double check, make sure we got ownership. We don't. So we'll get there eventually. We're kicking it off with the Detroit Pistons, 10-point dogs in Philadelphia, taking on, obviously, the 76ers. For this one, no Cade Cunningham. It's looking like he might be back for this next one, but we shall see. Q tag on Jeremy Grant right now. He missed the last game and did not practice yesterday. I have left Jeremy Grant out for right now just based on the fact that he didn't practice. And, you know, they don't really have to force Jeremy Grant back for the Pistons. That's not going to get them anywhere. Joel Embiid and Shake Milton both questionable again for the 76ers. Let's start on the Pistons side. I think there's one very clear option that stands out more than others today, but that assumes that he gets the same run that he got the last time out. What do you want to do with 4,600 on FanDuel, 4,700 on DraftKings, Josh Jackson?
Yeah, he would be one that stands out if he's in the starting lineup. Last game, they started him in place of Frank Jackson. He played 32 minutes. That's going to look like a solid option. He's around the fantasy point per minute, fantasy player for his career. If you're going to get 30 to 32 minutes from him at 4,700, he's going to look good. If he's not in the starting lineup, get away from it. I think even if Jeremy Grant's playing, that also would hurt. Like, even if, you know, Josh Jackson is in the starting lineup in place of Frank Jackson, but then Grant comes back, I think that knocks him down a little bit. He'd still be fine as value, but the big bump, I think, is if he starts and Jeremy Grant's out.
Yeah, I agree there. And like I said, I have Grant out. So I gave Jackson 30 minutes, just trying to be even like a little bit more realistic about it. Could certainly play more, which I do think is pretty interesting. He's just going to be an exceptional value option at those salaries. Who else stands out to you? We saw a big game out of Kelly Olynyk with Grant out. He's 5,400 on FanDuel, 5,800 on DraftKings. I think Isaiah Stewart still works. Sadiq Bey is pretty much fine no matter what, but his price tag is about where it should be. What else do you like from Detroit?
So Olynyk, if Grant is out, I think looks really good again. I mean, we saw it last year when he was with Houston that he kind of has this reputation within DFS as a boom or bust guy that, like, you know, has no floor and is going to let you down more often than he's going to help you. But we saw him with Houston last year on a team where he was playing, you know, starters minutes and didn't have a lot of talent around him, that he can just dominate a basketball game from a fantasy standpoint. It's a similar type of team here in Detroit. If Grant is out and Olynyk slides into the starting lineup again, I expect good production from Olynyk. He played about 30 minutes last game. He's 5,800 on DraftKings. You know, yeah, there's things that can go wrong, but I would still like him a lot. If Grant plays, there's no reason really to look at Olynyk. Outside of that, there's nothing that really stands out. Sadiq Bey, like you said, he's always playable. You've seen a nice bump in usage for him this season. I think I'm pulling it up now, but I think he's up around like 25, 26% for the season. That's not totally surprising. You know, he's a developing player. You expect him to take on a bigger role on a team like this. That's not what I was looking for. So there's upside there, but, you know, the price tag, I think, accounts for that. Isaiah Stewart has a nice ceiling for his salary, but, you know, also has his hands full on the defensive end in the spot. So there's not a whole lot that stands out to me if Grant plays. Grant himself would be fine at 6,600. But where I think there's really value here is if Grant sits, if Josh Jackson starts, and then if Kelly Olynyk starts.
So I don't really have
4.3% usage this year.
Okay. I don't really have much else. Like, I don't trust the point guard spot with Corey Joseph and Killian Hayes. Killian Hayes is just legitimately bad too. That doesn't really help. If Frank Jackson happens to move back into the starting lineup, I don't know why that would happen. He has been actually terrible so far, 0.25 FanDuel points per minute so far this season. Do you have any interest in Frank Jackson at 3,600 if he is starting again?
It kind of depends on how much value opens up on the slate. You know, it's tough to feel really confident in his minutes, even if he comes back into the starting lineup, because he's still competing with Josh Jackson. You have Corey Joseph there. You have Amadou Diallo that's getting some run off the bench. So it's tough to feel really confident in his minutes. But, you know, if value doesn't open up, it's a $3,600 starter that you can certainly take a chance on.
Okay. Anything else here on the Pistons side?
Unbelievable. I mean, he's going to obviously get better, but 60, at least to some extent, because he has to, but 63 minutes so far this season for Frank Jackson, 0.31 DraftKings points per minute.
Oh yeah, if he doesn't get better, he's not long for the league.
Right. Since the start of last year, he's at 0.77 DraftKings points per minute. So I mean, like, assuming that he's that type of player, there's no real reason to think that he like forgot how to play basketball entirely. If you're going to get, let's say, 26 minutes from him as a starter at 3,600, that's going to be fine, especially on a shorter slate.
All right, let's move it all over to Philly. 76ers, we sort of know exactly what's here. Same sort of rotations every time. Q tags on Embiid and Shake Milton. Although Shake Milton, I believe, is close. I think him getting back, you know, he's going to immediately grab probably like Isaiah Joe's minutes, and then we'll see how the rest of that ends up shaking out. Tobias Harris, Tyrese Maxey, Joel Embiid. We sort of know what we're doing here. I want to start with Embiid, though. 9,500 on FanDuel, 9,800 on DraftKings. For as much as people think this has been going like ultra poor for Embiid and we're worried about his knee and how he doesn't look good, still at 1.44 FanDuel points per minute so far this season. Like, it might not be what we want it to be, and maybe the ceiling isn't what we've normally seen, but it hasn't been just like a total tire fire for Embiid either. I will happily have a bunch as per usual at sub 10K price tags.
Yeah, right there with you. I mean, the only thing really that holds him back, I think, is it's always so easy to find high upside centers that are mid-range or cheap and, you know, let you pay up at other positions where the value is not as good. But other than that, I mean, I'm not really concerned about Embiid. 29% usage rate this year. Rebounding percentage is only at 13.5%, 23.7% assist percentage. I assume that the rebounds come back sooner rather than later. And the price tag is certainly reasonable. It's also not a imposing front court for Detroit. So the salary being where it is, I mean, the way I view it is basically if Embiid were playing to the level that you know, we were expecting him to play so far and that we've seen him play without Ben Simmons in the past, he's 10-6, 10-7 right now. So him being 9,800 is alleviating most concerns. And like you said, 1.4 DraftKings points per minute is still really, really good.
Yeah. So still got to get there. Tobias Harris for 7,600 on FanDuel, I think looks pretty good. He looks a little bit less so on DraftKings at 8,700. But again, you're always able to play Tobias Harris and will be playing Tobias Harris on a day like today. Do you have any specific Harris thoughts?
No. I mean, I think that he benefits without Ben Simmons. You know, we've obviously talked about that a lot this year. He would benefit more if Doc Rivers would stagger his minutes with Joel Embiid, but for whatever reason, he would rather run like 10 to 12 minutes a game of Isaiah Joe, Korkmaz, Reed, Thybulle, and Yang lineups. I don't really know why, but he does. So either way, though, with Embiid on the floor and without Simmons since last year, you're still talking about around 1.1, 1.12 DraftKings points per minute for Harris. In competitive games, you're typically going to get, you know, low to mid 30s, 33, 34 minutes at least. So I still think he looks good. The salary has gotten extremely expensive on DraftKings. So I think that kind of pushes him more into like GPP territory where he's got a very high ceiling, but at this point you are paying for that ceiling. Whereas for a lot of this year, I thought he was a good cash play too, because he's kind of just been priced to his floor.
I assume Tyrese Maxey is a problem again for me today. 5,500 on FanDuel, 5,800 on DraftKings, and a man that has been taking dollar bills out of my pocket. I still have to get back to him. At 0.72 fantasy points per minute over the past 30 days is not good. He's just shooting so poorly. Like, he's 1-for-9, I believe, from three with Joel Embiid on the floor. He just can't seem to make a bucket. I think that fixes itself at least a little bit. I don't expect major things out of Maxey, but something in like the 0.8 fantasy point per minute range would just go a long way. And if he continues to just get 30 plus minutes a game so far this season for Maxey, 30, 34, 36, and 34. I'm going to continue to get there, because when you're getting those sorts of minutes, you're going to fall into it at some point in time. I just don't know what to do anymore. Please tell everybody how much Tyrese Maxey sucks.
No, I mean, I agree with you. He's playing so many minutes and he's so cheap that he projects as a good point per dollar option. And when you're getting that many minutes, like you said, you're just going to have some games that are really good anyway. I think he's basically priced like to his median. I think that, you know, again, he has a 20.9% usage rate this year, 12.9% assist percentage. His rates are really being cut because, like, you know, Doc Rivers likes playing that second unit with all bench players. So you're getting just about every minute that Maxey's playing with Embiid, with Harris, and that's a problem. But I also agree with you. He's produced 7.73 DraftKings points per minute so far this year. He has a 49.1% true shooting percentage. If that comes up, you know, at least a little bit, which you would expect it to, and gets him to like 0.8 fantasy points per minute, that's still solid. So I think Maxey is fine at his price. Where I'm always concerned about Maxey is his ownership, because he just seems to be somebody that always gets ownership. And it's not that I think he should be low owned, but he's just someone, you know, he's the third offensive option on this team at best. And if he's going to pull 20 or 25% ownership, there's always players that I think I can pivot to that give me a similar range of outcomes.
I don't know if you've seen this yet, but I'd like to talk about it a little bit, because I think it's important. This past game against the Knicks, Maxey came in and played with the second unit in the first half. He got the middle rotation, didn't close out the second quarter, didn't play that middle rotation in the second half, however. So I don't necessarily know what that goal is going to be moving forward, but seeing him play that overlap end of the first quarter, beginning of the second quarter rotation, and even extended a bit, that's what I want to happen. I just don't know if it continues.
Yeah, that's a good point. I had actually specifically looked for that, but I pulled up the game from the 24th instead of the 26th. Yeah. So I didn't see it. But yeah, I mean, that's – if the Sixers start doing that with either Maxey or Harris, their fantasy production is going to really, really increase. If you could get, you know, so if, let's say he's playing 34 minutes on average, and so there's like 14 minutes, you know, where Harris and Embiid aren't on the floor. If you can get, you know, 40% of Tyrese Maxey's minutes without those guys, he's going to be a much, much better fantasy option. So that's at least a positive. It's a step in the right direction. It's always hard to read into that. Like, I know Will Barton was a perfect example earlier this year. In like the first game of the season, they played him with the second unit in the second half. He played really, really well. And it was just like, oh, cool. Like, we can use that to our advantage and start playing more Will Barton. And then ever since then, Malone's just been like, yeah, just kidding, we're not doing that. So I'm not going to project it as if that's the case, but it is a positive development at the very least.
Anything else in this game that you want to touch on?
Seth Curry's salary came down a little bit. He's kind of in that bucket where you can use him as a low-owned play and just hope he shoots really well, but he doesn't really do anything as far as peripherals go. He's not a high-usage guy, so kind of just, you know, hoping to get lucky on his shooting. Drummond at 4,900 in tournaments is, I think, always going to be fine at that price. He's kind of locked into like a 14 to 16 minute role, which normally he's not going to pay off his salary in that amount of time, but he certainly can. He's good enough. But where there's just kind of slate winning value for him is if Embiid gets hurt, plays poorly, gets in foul trouble, anything that gets Andre Drummond from like 15 minutes to 20 to 22 minutes, however that happens, he just wins you a tournament basically, or yep, you know, puts you in contention.
Foul trouble too. Like, I mean, you're hoping that Andre Drummond becomes last night's Montrezl Harrell,
right?
And not necessarily like he plays 32 minutes, because then it's unquestioned what you want, right? But even just a little bit is massive,
right? It's backup centers are always an interesting like piece in tournaments, because they never have ownership, almost never have ownership. But normally they're really, really good fantasy point per minute guys that are backing up a player at the position that is the most prone to foul trouble. So there's just like, it's a lot more likely that your backup center is going to play an extra 5 minutes any given night than like your backup point guard. And then also the backup center typically produces at a higher rate than the backup point guard. So it's always a spot where you don't want to typically get too carried away with it. But when you have someone like Drummond, you know, JaVale McGee was an example last night at like 3,100, where it's just like, okay, he's probably going to be fine in his normal playing time. But if anything goes wrong with the guy ahead of him, he's just going to smash. And you're not trying to predict that's going to happen. It's just, you know, over the course of a season, putting yourself in situations, especially on shorter slates like this, because there's less opportunity cost, you know, putting yourself in situations where it's just like, okay, I think Embiid's going to have something go wrong often enough where Drummond can be a very positive piece.
Anything else here?
Nope.
All righty. Schedule for the day. Buckle up, everybody. We got a lot of content. 11 a.m. immediately after this show, NFL Strategy Show Matchups Edition. We've got the MMA Strategy Show coming up at 1 p.m. alongside the Osimo Betting Show on the Osimo Odds channel, also at 1 p.m. NHL Strategy Show at 2. The Yahoo NFL Show at 3. the Jock Market NFL show at 3:30. We've got the NBA Deeper Dive pre-show coming up at 4:30, leading into the NBA Deeper Dive at 5, NBA Live Before Lock at 6, and then NFL Live Before Lock at 7:15 tonight. NBA Boom Bust Tool is free. It's probably the best thing that we've got going on NBA content from a data perspective. You don't want to skip a day here. Make sure you're checking it out. NFL Top Plays for Showdown and our NHL ownership, all free across the board. We move it on to the Atlanta Hawks, 2-point favorites in Washington against your Wizards. We got a lot to talk about your Wizards. We got to start on the Atlanta side first. No Okongwu. Lou Williams, questionable. Not really anything else that we have to worry about from Atlanta. This is a team that we sort of just know. I like Trae Young at 4K and, or yeah, 4K at 9K and 9,400. I think that Capella is fixing to be in a pretty interesting spot today at 6,900 across both sides. But what do you want to do with Atlanta today?
I think there's a lot to like here. We just got ownership updated and
perfect.
There's a fair amount of ownership going to the guys you would expect from Atlanta. Capella at 19%, Collins at 12, Young at 12, Hunter at 11. I think they all make sense. They don't project as like can't miss options, but I just think there's upside for all these guys at their price tags against a Washington team that I don't expect to be very good defensively. I don't expect to rebound that well. Now they're missing Daniel Gafford as well. So I think that there's a lot of upside here. John Collins at 6,300, like I still have no idea how many minutes this guy plays in a game where it's competitive and he's not in foul trouble, because he is always in foul trouble. Like he had a good game last night, still only played 25 minutes because he had picked up 4 fouls through the third quarter. So my assumption is that he's going to play around 30 minutes a night when he's not fouling people. At his price tag, he's got a very, very high ceiling there. Capella, we're typically seeing in that 28 to 29 minute range. This is a spot where you could just see him go nuts on the offensive glass and, you know, be getting putbacks, just have one of those, you know, 15-15 type games. So I think he looks really good. Trae Young, of course, can just torch anybody. And then, you know, the other two starters, Bogdanović and Hunter, I don't think they're as appealing. You know, Bogdanović, it's just kind of tough for him to get shots up when you're playing with Trae Young and John Collins. He's another example. Different. If Atlanta's rotation were different, I'd like him more if he were getting bench minutes, but they're not doing that. They have DeLon Wright running the second unit. They have Cam Reddish on that unit. So Bogdanović is pretty much just playing with the starters. He can still do well at 5,500, and he is only projected for 3% ownership. DeAndre Hunter, more of a defensive player, but he does rebound. He can get some defensive stats. He's only 4,700. So I think Capella and Collins, I think the front court is where I get to the most, just because I think they are at price points where you could just really see them do a lot of damage there. Trae Young, I think, is priced about where he should be, but he's still a very, very good play. And then, you know, using Bogdanović and Hunter sorted around that lineups is fine too.
We got Rods here saying Harrell could start. That's an understatement. We got Arkathelza saying don't chase Harrell against Atlanta. That is really terrible advice. We're about to get to that in a second.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I guess, the obvious. It's not chasing if someone's situation completely changes and
No price has changed.
Right. It would be chasing if Montrezl Harrell played 25 minutes last night, had 8 blocks and made like 7 three-pointers or something. Like, that would be, you know, like, okay, cool, we didn't learn anything. But Daniel Gafford not playing changes things a lot.
And I know what you were going for when you mentioned Capella having one of those 15 and 15 games. I've got him already projected at 11 and 14. So that might not even be like, that's like a 60th percentile outcome game. 20 and 20 is on the table for Capella in some sort of spot like this. Let's move it over to Washington so we can talk about your team here, because they've got a lot of question marks. We don't know the technical injury status on anything here for Washington because they're on the back-to-back. So Rui Hachimura is doubtful. I don't think that he is ready yet. Got to pay attention to it. Daniel Gafford, by all accounts, is not going to be playing today. I haven't seen anything definitive for that, but just based on everything I saw yesterday, there's no chance to me. Howell Neto didn't play yesterday. I assume he is still questionable. And then I don't know if they play Spencer Dinwiddie on a back-to-back coming off of knee surgery. We don't totally know his status. So to me, Washington is really difficult to talk about other than this. Montrezl Harrell is the best play of today's slate.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, he's projected to be the highest owned. That is very, very obvious. We have him at 41%. I mean, it's just this is one of those plays where basketball is just different than other sports. You know, like you can put Mike Trout in the best spot he still should never be more than like X percent owned because he's a hitter. You can put, you know, a wide receiver in a really good spot. There's still a lot of volatility at that position. You take somebody like Montrezl Harrell, you have a very, very long track record of what this guy does when he's on the floor from, you know, a productivity standpoint. And then you put him into a situation where the Wizards don't have a front court, assuming Gafford doesn't play.
Yeah.
Thomas Bryant's still out. We're assuming Rui's not playing. Gafford's out. The Hawks have a center in Capella. So, and Gorgui Dieng, like, Washington will probably go small out of necessity for parts of this game, but there's no real reason to think Montrezl Harrell isn't playing drastically more minutes. He already has been playing more minutes than Gafford anyway. He seems to have, you know, earned those minutes from Wes Unseld Jr. And then you look, you know, Gafford got hurt late in the second quarter yesterday. So you have the entire second half to look at. Montrezl Harrell played the final 14 minutes and 43 seconds of the game. He played the first 6 minutes and 37 seconds of the third quarter. So he sat from the 5 minute and 22 second mark to the 2 minute and 43 second mark in the third quarter. Other than that, he played every single minute that Daniel Gafford wasn't on the floor. And at his salary, you don't need to project him for 36 minutes. There's a decent chance he plays it, but knowing he's going to play, barring foul trouble, injury, blowout, whatever, knowing he's going to play at least like 28 minutes, that's really all you need. And chances are he's going to play a lot more than that.
Yeah. He just, there's very little that we could really add here. Unless Harrell can't make it to today's game, he'll be the most owned player on today's slate, barring like really crazy news we don't see coming. Do you have any speculation on whether they play Dinwiddie today?
My guess is they do, but I have no idea.
Yeah. Look, this game's at 7. We're going to know all of this stuff. So I'm having a hard time digging into Washington. Like, if Dinwiddie doesn't play, obviously fire up a ton of Beal, fire up a lot more of Kyle Kuzma. A bunch of other guys are going to end up looking randomly good. I like Kuzma a bit today, but Montrezl Harrell's the star here. After that, we kind of just got to wait for news, because like, if Neto is in or out, that matters depending on if Dinwiddie's playing or not. There's too many trickle downs for Washington right now.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. I mean, if Dinwiddie sits, like, all kinds of stuff is opening up here. But I think it's safe, you know, it's safe, I think, to assume Gafford sits, which would make Harrell look good. It also potentially increases the playing time for guys like $3,500 Davis Bertans, $3,800 Avdija. You should get Corey Kispert in the rotation. Not that any of them become, you know, standout options, but, you know, $3,500 Bertans on a short slate, you know, he used to be good at basketball. Maybe he remembers how. So that would be, you know, like, decent. Avdija still barely played in the second half, didn't really get any extra run. But, you know, just kind of mixing in these cheap guys, thinking that you could just see, you know, elevated minutes for somebody like Bertans, I think makes some sense.
Okay. All right. Let's move it over to the New York Knicks at the Chicago Bulls. No Kobe White. On. No. Okay. Go ahead.
You probably see even better rebounding numbers from Kyle Kuzma today.
Yeah. I mean, well, you should expect really good rebounding numbers for Kyle Kuzma. They can't get any better this season than they've already been.
That's fair. Yeah.
He's pulling down. What is his do you have it right now? His rebounding rates this year? Yeah. I mean, heading into yesterday, it was massive. I assume nothing changed.
He's at 18%.
Okay. Yeah. So.
So yeah, you shouldn't expect that to go anywhere.
Exactly.
Yeah. And based, I have a formula. It's not perfect, but it gives me some idea on like expected rebounding percentage early in the season based on rebound chances per 36 minutes. Even that has been like 15.4%. So based on the opportunities he's getting, it's not like he's just getting really lucky.
Yeah. I have him projected for 8 already. So that's pretty good for Kuzma. Kobe White out for the Bulls. Q tag on Nerlens Noel for New York. And then questionable tag on Zach LaVine, although everything that he said, he is going to be trying to play here. Knicks are 1-point dogs in Chicago. I don't see a lot here. We've got RJ Barrett as the only guy in double digits in ownership. I don't mind getting to Randall, but he's expensive at 9,900, 9,500. So I don't find the Knicks to be all that interesting from a fantasy perspective. They also have the lowest game total of the 6 games today.
Yeah, it's kind of a spot. Like, I don't think you're ever wrong for playing Julius Randle in tournaments. He plays huge minutes. He's really, really good, but I think he's priced where he should be. He's like Trae Young to me, I think. I still like him here. I think he has a good game. He's been very, very productive this year. He's seeing plenty of production. He hasn't, you know, dropped off anywhere. So I think he looks good, but I also think the price is about where it should be. Barrett, you know, 5,500, he's playing a lot of minutes, but you're also seeing the usage come down as a result of Evan Fournier. So that's a concern. Fournier himself, you know, if he plays 32 minutes, he's okay at 6,100. You're going to have some games where Alec Burks takes minutes away from him. There's not really anything that stands out. I mean, Mitchell Robinson, 5,300, certainly can outperform that price tag if he's able to stay on the floor dealing with Vooch. So there's, you know, Kemba played really well last game. There's outside of Julius Randle, I think there's reasonable pricing on the Knicks. The problem is that outside of Julius Randle, you can't really trust the production of any of these guys.
I assume we're on the same page for Rose and Walker. Like, two games ago, Rose closed. This past game, Kemba Walker closed. I don't think we're ever going to know who that is heading into the particular day.
Right. I think it's pretty much, like, typically in situations like that, I'll give, you know, 25, 26 minutes to Kemba since he's starting. I'll give 23-ish to Rose. But it's just going to typically be who's playing better. How's the game going? You saw Kemba look really good and play really well last game, so he closed it out. If Rose is playing well off the bench, you know, he's going to stay in. It's kind of the same thing with Fournier and Burks. Like, I don't think it's quite the same because I think Fournier is going to close over Burks more often than Walker's going to close over Rose. But it's the same kind of thing where if Burks comes in off the bench, Tibbs is probably just going to say, like, okay, cool, you're done, Evan. Like, Burks is playing well. So I think that's part of the reason why it's really hard to trust anything on the Knicks is, you know, yeah, Thibodeau will play his guys big minutes, but he has bench depth at positions this year where he has a couple guys on the bench he doesn't mind actually playing in Burks and Rose. Like, you're never looking at it saying, you know, Obi Toppin is going to take minutes from Julius Randle or something. But
yeah, that ain't happening.
You know, but Burks will take minutes from Fournier often enough. Rose will certainly take minutes from Kemba. It does give an opportunity in tournaments because, and we talked about this with Kemba before the last game, it pulls down the pricing on these guys because you get enough games where Kemba plays 20 minutes. It pulls the price down, but then people still don't want to go there because they're just like, Kemba's going to play 20 minutes again. So it gives you an opportunity in tournaments where you basically can just hope Kemba plays well. And, you know, it's always nice to get guys in tournaments where they can get more minutes if they're playing well. And if they're not playing well, they're not going to get more minutes. We don't really care because if they're not playing well, your lineup's not doing well anyway. So it does give you that opportunity. It's just, you know, a very volatile spot.
On the Bulls side, the Q tag on LaVine will be important. I expect him to play. All signs seem like he's going to play. But if he doesn't, DeMar DeRozan, Lonzo Ball, and Nikola Vucevic are about to look significantly better because we're taking out a 30-ish percent usage rate guy. Assuming Zach LaVine is in, I think DeMar for 7,400 on FanDuel, 7,600 is probably the best option. But on DraftKings, I think everybody looks really, really similar. On FanDuel, there are prices that work a little bit better. Lonzo's cheaper on FanDuel. DeMar's cheaper on FanDuel. You get Patrick Williams' value being a little bit more interesting. I think they're a tough team to play on DraftKings, however. They look good, and I want to have some, but I don't think that anybody stands out.
Yeah, I mean, it's a team that just this year in general, I don't think when they're healthy, guys are really going to stand out unless you just get an egregious mispricing, because on average, their production is going to be good, but not great. But you're just going to get, you know, blow up games from time to time from any of these guys. I do think on DraftKings, Vooch stands out the most at 8,600. That's just a pretty cheap price tag for him. He's averaging 1.2 DraftKings points per minute this year, still has a 24% usage rate. It's third highest on the team because LaVine and DeRozan are shooting a ton, but also a 17.5% rebounding percentage, 15% assist percentage. I think he's just a little bit cheaper than he should be. But in tournaments, you certainly can also look to LaVine. You can look to DeRozan. The tear in his thumb is on his non-shooting hand, talking about LaVine. So that's, you know, less reason for concern from a fantasy standpoint. So yeah, I mean, I think in tournaments, those guys are fine. But if I have to point to one guy from the Bulls, I'm looking at Vooch.
I really wish I had more for this game, but that low total is not appealing. Yeah. If they're all at full strength, that's less appealing. And I have a hard time just sifting through it. So I'm going to have this game for sure. I just don't see myself having like any specific player a lot.
That's pretty much where I'm at. Like, and it goes back to what I was saying about the Bulls, where you're going to have very good games. Like, you're going to have potential, you know, tournament winning games pretty often from any of Vooch, LaVine, DeRozan, Lonzo. You know, they all play enough minutes. They all produce at a high enough rate, but it's going to be really difficult going into a slate to say, like, this is a Vooch game or this is a LaVine game. So it's more so they're normally going to be relatively low owned across the board. You can get, and again, this is, you know, especially if you're like a 150 maxer, you can get over the field on most of these guys without having to take some crazy stand where it's like, oh, I played 35% Vooch and 5% Levine and 5% DeRozan. I would much rather typically be going into a slate like, okay, I played 10 to 15% of all of them.
Jason Jeffcoat, Kemba is a lazy rich boy who does just enough to keep his job. I'm pretty sure that Kemba is known as like one of the hardest working players in the NBA and like one of the best like individual people that exists in the NBA.
Yeah, it would probably help if he had like more cartilage in his knees.
Yeah. I mean, that's what a take. Of all the people to pick, that he's the lazy person who just does just enough to keep his job. Like, Kemba Walker is at the opposite end of that list.
Yeah, for sure.
That's amazing. Amazing. Anyway, the presenting sponsor of this show is Prize Picks. They offer daily prop-based contests, and you can use the promo code AWESOMO when you sign up at Prize Picks to get a $100 first match deposit bonus. You got to put in 100 there. So it's 100% instant match up to 100. You don't have to worry about sharks, optimizers, mass entries. You can make a five-player lineup that can net you up to 10x your entry fee. You don't even necessarily have to get all five. You can get four, gets a little bit less of a payout. Use your knowledge of multiple sports so you can make cross-sport entries. You can download the app in the App Store or go to Google Play or play on prizepicks.com. We've got free player prop tools on the website that will help you out. I've got my player prop stuff set up for Prize Picks now. Prize Picks, if you're listening, I would love for you guys to put the fantasy prop projections up early enough that I could talk about them on the Process Show, 6:30 a.m. Eastern time every single day. You guys also sponsor that bad boy. So I'd love to have them then so I could talk about it with my people. But we can talk about my favorite plays now. I have it all loaded from the website. Clint Capella, I will tell you, is my favorite over on Prize Picks. But I've got two for you, Adam. Are you ready?
Yes.
Nikola Vucevic, over under 43.5 fantasy points today.
Hang on, I wasn't actually ready. I was lying.
Thank you for that.
43.5 fantasy points?
Yeah.
I'll take the under.
Nikola Vucevic, of the 30 that were available, is tied at the bottom because I have him projected for 43.5 fantasy points. Got to skip the Vooch one. I got it on the number. Next one up. Are you ready?
Yes.
Julius Randle, over under 43.5 fantasy points.
That sounds really good too. I would lean under, but I think they're both really close.
Okay. I got him at 45.1. So I would take the over on Randle. Like I said, my favorite over is Clint Capella right now. Montrezl Harrell is right behind him for an over. And my favorite under, Kemba Walker, under 26.5.
I've been pretty impressed with their lines. Like I feel like there have been like similar sites in the past where you look and it's like, this isn't even fun because they're so far off. Like I was going through yesterday before the show with Alex and it was like, damn, like these are tough. Like they're like all right where I have guys projected.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's they do set like super sharp lines. I need to grab that ownership quickly and drop it in the sheet. There we go. Now things will look a little bit different. That's helpful. All righty, moving it on to Utah at Houston. Jazz 9-point favorites against the Rockets. This one should be a blast. No Rudy Gay, no Daniel House. Questionable tags on Bojan Bogdanović and Eric Paschal. Paschal played with like an infection in his face, which is just sounds terrible. Doesn't seem like anybody should be playing with an infection in their face. Bojan Bogdanović being questionable, though, very interesting because the only way that Utah ever has guys immediately look a lot better is if someone is out. So I hope Bojan sits just to make the Jazz more appealing. Otherwise, everybody on the Jazz largely looks the same. I'd get more Donovan Mitchell over anybody else on FanDuel because he's 8,300. Otherwise, I can't sift through the Jazz.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of just like they're so boring to talk about because nothing changes. Mike Conley's going to play 30 minutes. He's pretty cheap. He's a reasonable play. Donovan Mitchell's really good. He's also really expensive. Rudy Gobert is really good. He's also really expensive. Jordan Clarkson is capable of scoring a lot off the bench. His minutes are somewhat of an issue if nobody is hurt ahead of him. Bojan Bogdanović is capable of getting hot from three. Normally he won't. Royce O'Neal doesn't play offense. Like there's just like nothing ever to add about this team. It's always the same thing if everybody's in. So if everybody's in, I think Conley looks the best to me at 5,900. If Bojan if Boyan sits, I think it's likely you get more minutes for Clarkson. I think you get more minutes for Joe Ingles. So they would both start to look a lot better.
I don't have anything else I could talk about for the Jazz. It's an impossible team to talk about from DFS. So fingers crossed, Boyan sits. It's a fantastic matchup, which unfortunately makes it sort of interesting on the opposite side. The Houston Rockets have Christian Wood around 20% owned. We've got Kevin Porter Jr. on FanDuel, where he's 5,900, 27% owned. I like that number quite a bit. Jayshon Tate has a broken price on DraftKings. He's 4,800, looks like a nice value at small forward, power forward. Eric Gordon for 4,200 on FanDuel, $1,000 cheaper than he is on DraftKings. I don't like it because of how good Utah is, particularly defensively, but I'm going to be playing a bunch of Houston today.
I think you might be by yourself on that one.
Interesting. Okay. It is a little different from FanDuel to DraftKings, like Kevin Porter Jr. significantly cheaper. The Jayshon Tate piece is the only weird one.
Yeah, I mean, even he, that it's still Jayshon Tate.
I mean, he's 15% owned. Like, he's certainly a player pool type guy.
Yeah. And they're getting ownership too. I mean, I guess it is a smaller slate. So there's upside for these guys for sure. It's just the matchup sucks. And I don't love, like, Christian Wood at 8,400. Yeah, he can certainly do well, but I think that's where he should be priced, if not a little bit too high in this spot. He played 36 minutes last game. I mean, the playing time has been great for him. So he's fine. I don't love it at that ownership though. Like, you have, just, you know, as a easy example from guys that we've already talked about, you have Christian Wood at basically 20%. You have Vooch $200 more at 10%. I'm perfectly fine just kind of like flipping that and playing more Vooch, as, you know, the first guy I thought of. Kevin Porter Jr. I think is fine. Like, he has a nice ceiling. You saw him get off to a pretty good start last game. Then he got in foul trouble in the third quarter, ended up only playing 31 minutes, but typically you're going to get 36, 37 from him in competitive games. Jalen Green is reasonably priced. Tate's cheap. So, like, I'm with you. They're playable. I don't look at any of these guys and think, you know, oh yeah, I think I'm going to play a lot of them tonight. Like I did, you know, against Dallas the other night, for example.
So I don't disagree with you there. Kevin Porter Jr., I don't mind his ownership on FanDuel at 5,900. I think that's just too low for what his ceiling brings. Every other guy that's getting the ownership, Wood at 20%, Eric Gordon at 16%, Tice at 12%. I ran my crunch. I have minimal amounts of all three of those guys. So I guess I probably misspoke in just saying that, like, they are getting ownership. I don't necessarily think that I get a lot of it, but Porter is the guy that I will get to on FanDuel. Tate would be that same guy for me on DraftKings.
Yeah, I think that's
I probably misspoke a bit in terms of my aggression about the Houston Rockets. I have them overowned.
Yeah, okay. Also, Şengün for, I think I'll say it for, I've said it every time they play. Şengün's kind of like Drummond from a fantasy standpoint, where he's probably, like, if the game's close, he's probably playing, you know, 14, 15 minutes and not someone you really want. But if the game blows out or Christian Wood gets in foul trouble or, you know, any number of things happen over the course of a basketball game, and Şengün happens to play 20 minutes or something, then he's going to end up looking like a very good low owned value. So it's just another, you know, backup center that produces at a high rate.
Anything else in this one?
No, this kind of just feels like a dumpster fire of a game.
It does. Well, Spurs, 6.5-point dogs in Dallas against the Mavs, 222 total. No Doug McDermott for the Spurs, and questionable tags for Kristaps Porzingis and Sterling Brown. This should be fun to do. So let's start on the San Antonio side. No McBuckets. We've got DeJounte Murray, 18% owned on FanDuel. Not all that much ownership on DraftKings. Derek White is around 20% across both sites. Kelton Johnson is around 20% across both sites. Lonnie Walker is pretty chalky on DK. Devin Vassell, pretty chalky on DK. Not so sure I want to get to all of that ownership right now, but I don't know what they're going to do. Maybe Thad Young finally plays. Maybe it's Kata Bates-Jop again. What do you want to do with San Antonio against the Mavs?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because Thad Young makes it so difficult to confidently talk about this team's rotations because he hasn't been in the rotation. He played 3 minutes last game. Once McDermott didn't come back after his first stint in the third quarter, but you still didn't see Young at all in the second half. You saw Kata Bates-Jop play a lot. You saw Devin Vassell play almost every single minute after that point. Lonnie Walker played a ton. So my expectation is that you see a bunch of playing time for Lonnie Walker, Devin Vassell, Kata Bates-Jop, but, like, there's nothing stopping Pop from just being like, okay, Thad Young's playing 28 tonight or you know, yeah, whatever. So I guess everything, you know, you're thinking or saying about the Spurs comes with the caveat of there is a very, very obvious piece that could just wreck everything we think is going to happen here. But, you know, you kind of, without any sort of news, like Thad Young will be in the rotation tonight or something, you kind of just have to go with what we've seen so far. And I think that does make Devin Vassell look like a good value. It makes Ketabate Jop look like a good value. It makes Lonnie Walker look a good value because you're taking McDermott's minutes and probably spreading them out to those guys. And especially in the case of Walker and Vassell, they were already, you know, solid rotation pieces anyway. So not guys that I'm super confident in their fantasy production, but I do like the salaries. I still think Keldon Johnson's a little bit underpriced for his role this year. He was extremely disappointing last time out, but still, you know, 26.5% usage rate this year leads the team, 0.92 DraftKings points per minute, 5,400, I think is a reasonable price tag. We've finally gotten a difference in salary on DraftKings between Derek White and DeJounte Murray. It was for most of the season, it's been like, I think Derek White's good, but I would just rather pay, you know, a little bit extra for DeJounte Murray. Now DeJounte Murray is priced to his ceiling. Not to say you can't play him in tournaments. He still has a really high ceiling, but he's about a 1.12 DraftKings points per minute guy without DeRozan since last year. He's at 1.28 for the season, but going into last game, he was at 1.11. So, you know, keep in mind that's being skewed by his 71 point fantasy game. So I think where he's really, really expensive now, you still have a reasonable price tag on Derek White, who's averaging a fantasy point per minute. So I like him more than I like Murray at their respective salaries.
I'm worried about that Walker and Vassell ownership. They saw monstrous minutes bumps this last time out. They were averaging, you know, like 22, 23 a game across their first three games. No one had played more than 25 in a spot. They shot the lights out that last game, and I think they stayed out there a little bit more for it. So if that ownership stays where it's at, I think they're pretty easy to dodge, although all bets are off because of McBuckets being out.
What do you think about Jakob Poeltl?
I mean, I love him individually, 7K on FanDuel, 7,100 on DraftKings. The minutes are obviously secure at this point. I think he's like a – look, if he's 1.5% owned like we have him right now, I think Jakob Poeltl is an incredible GPP play, considering he absolutely smashed 2 days ago. I think he's fine just like on his own.
I think he's priced – like I think his salary is – like where it should be. I don't think he's overpriced based on what his role has been on this team this year. You know, like you said, the playing time is secure. He's averaging just north of 20 rebound chances per game. He's averaging 6.3 potential assists per game. For the season, he's at 1.19 DraftKings points per minute, 18.9% usage rate, 17.6% rebounding percentage, 15.9% assist percentage. I think there's a lot of sticker shock for Jakob Poeltl at 7,100. Yeah. I don't think he's like it's a price point where you're not looking at it anymore saying like, oh yeah, Jakob Poeltl in cash, or, you know, Jakob Poeltl, I think was like 30% owned last slate. But I don't think based on his role this year that it's like an egregious price tag or anything.
No, not at all. I mean, he's a double-double. He's a 50-50 shot or more for a double-double every night. And he's one of the better defensive centers in basketball. Like, he's just going to be around doing shit for this team. And they want him to play more, given the fact that they're slowly but surely getting rid of all of their older role players. Let's move it over to Dallas, where we're not expecting Kristaps Porzingis to play. I didn't put him in the rotation today, but we've had this conversation a lot over the past year or so. Kristaps Porzingis not being on the floor doesn't really change anything for Luka Doncic. That doesn't mean I don't want to play Luka Doncic, because he still looks like my favorite pay-up option, but whether KP plays or not, I love Luka.
Yeah, I love Luka either way. It's that same conversation we always have. Luka's ceiling probably gets a little bit higher without Porzingis, just because there's one less relatively high usage guy out there to take shots away. But I think that's typically offset by a ridiculous increase in ownership for Luka that is not backed up by anything he does without Porzingis on the floor. So that's always like the one issue I have when Porzingis sits. It's Luka's still really, really good. I still really want to play Luka. I think the field just always or typically overreacts to Porzingis sitting, and it doesn't have a huge positive impact on Luka. It's not a negative for him. It's just he's still that guy. So either way, I like Luka quite a bit. But I guess the point being, like, the projection's not really going up for me. If Porzingis sits, the ownership probably will go up, which naturally just is going to make me have less of someone.
Absolutely. Well, what do you want to do with the rest of the team if Porzingis is indeed not going to play today? Because we've got Tim Hardaway at 27% ownership on FanDuel, taking the big bump. Dwight Powell, 3,700 on DraftKings. Those minutes became a bit more secure. Where else do you go?
Yeah, so, you know, Powell's still getting his, you know, 24, 25 minutes. Boban was in the rotation last game. He played nine
minutes. Everyone was. They had their leadership council said that all 15 guys had to play. Or all 12 guys had to play, or whatever the hell it is. Yeah.
Okay, I'll rephrase that.
That's an actual quote.
I'll rephrase. Boban was the first guy off the subbed in at the first opportunity, along with Jalen Brunson. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you had Trey Burke play like halfway through the second quarter. You had Ntilikina and Moses Brown play in the third quarter. But Boban was actually in the rotation in both halves. Played 4 minutes in the second half. Played 5 minutes in the first half. If Porzingis is out, there's potentially, you know, the possibility for him to play 10 minutes, 12 minutes, something like that. Normally wouldn't be worth mentioning, but he does produce at a ridiculous rate. It's tough to really get to be too confident, I think, in any, you know, one individual guy. Like, you could see more minutes for Cauley Stein if Porzingis sits. You could see Sterling Brown play more. You probably see Max. My assumption is Maxey would start, and you probably get like 30 to 32 minutes from Maxey. At 3,200, that would make him a really good value. I think that's probably the biggest piece that like goes from not really being an option to being a very good option if Porzingis sits.
Is there anybody else you want to touch on from Dallas?
Jalen Brunson still looks like a pretty good value at 5K. I think last game was one of those annoying games where he's really popular because the slate sort of dictated it. And then he also happens to go have a much better game than average, but he's still, you know, you can expect him to play 25, 26 minutes. He's between 0.9 and 1 fantasy points per minute. Like, that just projects pretty well at his salary.
All right, let's close this one out. Memphis at Golden State, 5.5-point dogs for Memphis, 233 total. Same sort of injury news that we've had across the board here. Jaren Jackson and De'Anthony Melton, both 20-something percent owned on FanDuel. Not so sure I love those numbers. They are both 20% owned on DraftKings as well. Plus, your boy, Desmond Bane, 24% owned. How are you managing Memphis against Golden State?
Some pretty decent pricing still.
Yeah.
De'Anthony Melton, 5,100. You know, he was disappointing yesterday. 4,900 on Desmond Bane looks really good if he's able to play. He got elbowed in the face by Larry Nance at the end of the third quarter last night. Tried to cost me some money. Left the game, didn't come back, but he did return to the bench. So I'm assuming he plays, and the reason being is that he did return to the bench, but he returned with like 6 minutes left in a, I don't know, 20-point game or something like that. He was obviously never coming back in at that point, regardless of his health. So, we'll get information at some point, but I'm assuming that Bane plays. And if he does, he looks like a very good value. He's one guy that we've seen take a significant step up this season from what he did last year. We saw him start at times last year, and you know, he would play 30 minutes, but he was like a 17, 18% usage guy. Didn't really do a whole lot. This year, he has a 24.9% usage rate. He's averaging 1.13 DraftKings points per minute. Even if his shooting efficiency comes down and his, you know, per minute production drops, that's a very good role for a guy that's 4,900 playing about 30 minutes. And then also, this is a game where you could certainly see it go small. Steven Adams has been playing a lot of minutes this year, except for last night where he was in foul trouble the entire game. But when he's not in foul trouble, you've been seeing him play a lot of minutes. He could play, you know, 30, 32 minutes again tonight, but you also could see more Brandon Clark, you know, more Zaire Williams, more Xavier Tillman, like more smaller lineups that would also allow guys like Desmond Bane, Kyle Anderson to play more minutes. So I think that, you know, Melton and Bane stand out as the value that I trust. But I think in large field tournaments, mixing in some $3,100 Brandon Clark, mixing in, you know, a little bit of $4,600 Kyle Anderson makes some sense. You're just, you know, sort of hoping the game goes small. Like I wouldn't play Clark or Anderson with Steven Adams. I think you want to have separate lineups where, you know, Adams is a good play if you get 32 minutes from him. Clark is a good play if he goes from 12 to 20. So I think you want to have separate lineups where, you know, Steven Adams plays. This is a good lineup with Adams. Steven Adams loses minutes because of the matchup. Then you get, you know, more Clark or more Kyle Anderson.
Before we get Adam's final thoughts on the Warriors, make sure you guys hit that like button to celebrate Adam's big 100K win from yesterday. Subscribe to the channel, hit the notification bell as well. Curry, Green, Wiggins, Poole, all 15-30% owned on FanDuel. Draymond not getting that sort of ownership on DK, but those other three guys are all around 20%. I will unsurprisingly be lighter on Curry as per usual, but I want to get your thoughts. How do you feel about Golden State in the game with the biggest total on the slate?
I love Steph as usual, higher on him than you are as usual. He's right now, he's projected for 22% ownership. Luka is at 24. If that's the case, I would still lean towards Luka. Not a very strong preference for me, but I do think that they're similar, but I'd give the edge to Luka. But this is like a perfect example of what we were talking about with Porzingis. If Porzingis gets ruled out and Luka goes from 24% to 40% and Steph goes from 22% to 15%, like I'm going to just end up playing more Steph if you get that sort of ownership gap.
Absolutely.
So definitely paying a lot of attention to Luka versus Steph ownership, especially because at least right now there's not a ton of really good value on the slate. So I don't anticipate having massive amounts of like Steph plus Luka lineups. It's going to be a lot of like one or the other, I think. So paying attention to the ownership between those two makes a lot of sense. Other than that, though, you know, I like Draymond at 7,400. You're seeing him return to playing, you know, 34 minutes or so a night. That's always good to see. He produces very well across the board. Andrew Wiggins played another 31 minutes last game. We haven't seen 34 or 35 from him yet this year. He's been limited a bit, but there's still some upside for him at 6,100. Jordan Poole's price tag, I think, is about where it should be. So nothing outside of Curry really stands out to me from Golden State, but I think any of the rest of the starters, except for Looney, are good enough options.
Anything else you want to touch on before we get out of here?
No, I don't think so.
Alrighty, guys. Thank you so much for joining us. Adam, you will have the deep dive out later today and then back for the deeper dive at 6, or at 5, rather?
Yeah, deep dive will be out in a couple of hours, deeper dive at 5.
Sign up using the promo code NBA Strategy Show to get 25% off your first week of Osmo Plus Platinum. I promise you that's a good idea. You can find those links in chat, generally speaking, or in the description of this video. Good luck tonight, everybody. Win some money. We're closing out the work week strong tomorrow for another edition of the NBA Strategy Show.